Is it possible that communism is still valid in a purist political sphere?
Well, I don't know if it's very valid. It should be.
Is it could it be effective towards a better organization of society?
No. If you use the word communism at all, you must use it in the sense which it has received in the revolutionary context of Marx. And Marx has given an explicit definition that the transfer of the instrument of private production into the government, hand of the government, is worse than any capital. So that you get worse than capital. The only monopoly governments today, monopoly constructions are today to be found in communist countries, not in the West.
You have the theme about motivation, you know, social motivation. Yeah. I think that requires
just social motivation.
Mobilization and so on. Yeah. You know, making people respond to kind of high ideas, ideas of order and so on.
Yeah.
In some real kind of a mass way, without kind of any kind of hysteria being in it.
Yeah.
Now, I was wondering if you say that ideology is obsolete, as a historian with a vast perspective on history.
Yeah.
What would you propose putting in the place of ideology as it was in the past in order to translate theory into something more concrete and motive?
What do you mean by translating theory?
Mediated into the concrete.
What do you mean by theory?
Well, we'll say kind of meaning defined in terms of system.
Well, I wouldn't do such a thing. System is part of the ideology, beginning in the 17th century. Nobody had any system before that time.
Yeah.
After Descartes, we have to all learn the language of the system.
Yeah. Well, suppose we put it some other way then. Don't put it that way. We say someone gets a new idea.
Yeah.
We'll say a new idea of how to run businesses or how to, we'll say, order society and so on.
Yeah.
How do you propose, without ideological motivation, to get support for it?
If you don't get just a new idea, it must be something that can be applicable in a certain situation. You know what you mean by a new idea. If you just say a new idea in the absence, I should say, forget about it. New ideas are fancies, private fancies. Unless they are related to a problem in reality.
Yeah, but they could be related in the sense that it would be possible to construct and motivate reality so that the idea would become applicable.
Well, yes, you can always do that. For instance, you can take a quite vulgar affair. We have a presidential race now in the United States, you see? And a man like McGovern is very incompetent, but he has an appeal. Now, why does he have an appeal? The appeal is grand larceny. Take money from somebody and give it to somebody else. You can always have an appeal, and you can get people accustomed to getting money from somebody else. You know? Mm-hmm. Of course, you can make that an appealing idea. But I would rather suggest, unless you are at receiving end of the matter, that you get the money. If you are the one from whom the money is taken, you see, I would resist it.
Okay, maybe you could find a different word and you could say, as Andy was saying before you came, he'd like to ask you what you meant by theory. Could I just, if you mind, I know it's not fair that you're being asked the question, but what would you mean by theory? You'd have
nothing at all. Yeah, I would rush to nothing at all. You see, the word theory in the sense in which you use it is an invention of the liberal era. In the second half of the 19th century, everybody had a new theory. Say, for instance, you have a new theory that all the civilizations of the world, the high civilization, start from the conquest of agricultural settlers by nomadic conquerors. Then you have a two-stratum society with an upper class and a lower class, and that is how all the evil of a stratified upper class, lower class, and the dominant class came into existence. It's a beautiful idea. It was developed in the system of sociology by Oppenheim, about 1900.
You heard of theories before that, though. There might be social theories.
Yes, well, it is a social theory. Now, the only trouble with it is that there is not a shred of evidence material that any such things ever happened.
Mm-hmm.
So you have a lot of theories of that kind, but for which even on the ordinary basis of our ordinary high school knowledge of history, there is just no basis. Take anything like the Communist Manifesto, it begins. All history, social history to the present, has been the history of class struggles. Well, now look, there was a Peloponnesian War, there was a Persian War, there was a conquest of Alexander, there were Punic Wars. What have they to do with class struggles? Kind of a theory like that.
I think really, I don't figure that Andy wants to use alien in all these wrong words, so he needs a different word. I think you use a word like experiences. Could you say, like, why, what is political action, for example? And why would people act politically? Maybe.
Well, it depends on what you mean by political. Mm-hmm. You have to, you see, you start always from certain, what I call topics, mm-hmm. presume that they are concepts which they aren't. And then want to find a reality which fits it, which it doesn't. And there you get into the mess.
Well, I was asking what did you mean by politics, for example? And you gave an extremely wide, and
the term politics, in the sense in which it is used in any technical or scientific context, was coined by Plato and Aristotle. And there you have an episteme politica, a political science. Mm-hmm. And the political science is defined by Aristotle as the science perita anthropina, about human affairs, which means the order of existence in personal existence, in social existence, and in historical evolution. First part ethics, second part politics, third, but wasn't written by Aristotle, the historics. That is political science of human affairs. And if you skip anything of that, you see, you can erect a fragment into an absolute.
And I think I gather from the end of that, Annalisa, that you still find that is, we say, a basic framework, in other words, man's society history.
There's, of course, a basic framework. Nothing has been discovered beyond it. Only we have new variations in history. For instance, in the whole horizon of Aristotle, there was one type of person not yet in appearance in a society, what I call the truth possessors, post-apocalyptics, were in possession of a truth. Nobody was in possession of a truth before that. But everybody was in search of it, and knew that he couldn't get it, absolutely. So, when you get them into, say, the apocalyptic Gnostic movement, you know, every one of the sectarian leaders is a possessor of truth, you know, then you get a lot of trouble, because then they can fight until they are blue in the face.
But that they already possess the truth and...
They already possess the truth and do not orient themselves by reality.
There's one curious phenomenon, I think, in that example. Something occurred to me. If you compare the funeral speech of Pericles at the second year of the Peloponnesian War, you get a total and unreflective confidence that the form of society in which these men died is a perfection.
Now, perfection of freedom, as far as Pericles is concerned.
Now, there seems to be no misgiving detectable anywhere in the speech. And yet, if you take the constitution of Athens and the collection of Greek constitutions carried out by the Lyceum and Aristotle's politics, the utopia Plato, all of this following on the total collapse of the Pericles both. Interesting, what the time span would be from the opening of the Peloponnesian War to the...
Well, the Pericles was 530, the end was...
and say the invasion of Asia Minor by
yeah, we don't do France. We're 100 years distance.
100 years.
Yeah.
Socrates was alive at the beginning of this.
Yeah.
And Aristotle was alive at the
at the end of this period.
And what you have is a drifting into an area of complete unreality, totally out of touch with the actuality, so that he was actually about to form in the case of Aristotle.
Yeah, well, I would not say that he was out of touch with reality.